Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills?
Or a newbie
looking to become one? You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
Hey, it's Sarah Larby. You're listening to Where Should I Invest? And today's guest is the one and only Dahlia Barsoom. And we speak about BMO and what they have that they just came out with. Three major things. And if you are in the short-term and midterm rental market and you are doing that as a strategy, you will want to tune into this. It is going to be a game changer. And we also talk about what's happening in the market, the different strategies, what makes sense today, and much more. Dahlia Barsoom from Streetwise Mortgages has been my personal mortgage broker for many years and has helped me scale and eventually leave the 9-to-5. Hope you guys enjoy the podcast. Don't forget to leave a rating and review. And March 19th, we are having a investor and entrepreneur in, networking event that is from 6:30 to about 9:30. If you are local to Burlington, check that out, midtermrentalproperties.com, and go to the events tab for more information. Let's bring in Dahlia. Dahlia, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, Sarah. How are you?
Good, good. I'm excited to have you back. You know, there's been a lot of folks that are, you know, in the ups and downs. And I would say the last year has been very hard and difficult for many real estate investors across Canada. And I want to talk about that, but also what is, you know, the upside of that and some of the new things that are coming up with some of the banks. But for those, I'm sure many people listening to this that have been longtime listeners know about you, probably have heard all your wonderful tips as well on the podcast. But as a quick 30,000 foot view, just a quick intro on who you are.
I am the founder of Streetwise Mortgages, and we help Canadians build up their property portfolios, the ones that they envision, using the best cost of money.
Amazing. And I believe last time we had you on, you cover the entire country, I think, or almost the entire country.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, we'll be expanding.
All right. Amazing. So this has been a tough year, obviously, with the rates being where they are so far. We haven't seen any decreases quite yet. And the appraisals are, you know, starting to not come back where we were expecting them to back in the day. And I think just the sentiments, and for those, you know, at home listening to this, you're not alone as a real estate investor in the market. You've probably seen your cash flow decrease. You've probably been more stressed. And what are you seeing, you know, from clients and just as a general sentiment of what people are dealing with out there?
We are seeing a couple of things. One, pretty much a lot of people are at the peak right now in terms of pressure. Right now is the peak of pressure because of the higher rates. And, you know, some folks have exhausted their reserves carrying certain things in their portfolio. So everybody is, a lot of people are under a lot of pressure. So we get a lot of clients coming to us saying, okay, Dahlia, what do I do? I mean, my renewal is up. Do I take fixed, do I take variable? Is there anything I can do right now to help my cash flow? And we're always trying to find ways to help clients get some breathing room. And what I can share on that note is that we are at the end rather than at the beginning. So there is a short stretch left before we start to see some relief. So that's the good news. So we're still seeing portfolios where, you know, that are negative cash flowing and investors are under pressure. We're also seeing values not come through on refinances in some cases. Actually, often, I would say, you know, even if the client qualifies and they want to put money or do something and they're expecting to pull $200,000, value comes in lower and we're dealing with a smaller number. And obviously with appraisals, we're always looking to see, you know, where can we help the appraiser maybe see things that they may not have considered. Can we provide context as to what was done to the property? Are the comparables accurate? Are the adjustments reasonable? So we are always trying to have conversations with the appraisers to see if there is a better way to support the value. But even with values coming in lower, I tell investors, it's not that black or white, right? A value coming in lower, unless it kills the deal, is not a black or white. It's if you're getting less out and the number still makes sense, do it. And later on, we can top up when the numbers come through. So values is the second challenge. And the third challenge is private money. I've seen investors who have been on private money who sadly lost their portfolios altogether because they got themselves into a high leverage situation, or they're dealing with a lot of pressure from private lenders who are looking to pull out or come back to renew with crazy fees. So these are the three flavors that we're seeing. But on a positive note, I'm seeing people look for properties and buy properties because prices are lower. And yes, the rates are higher, but if you buy something at a lower price today, although the rate is higher, once the rates come down, you're still going to be ahead compared to waiting for a lower rate and buying at a higher price. So we're seeing more purchase activity come through.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting summary. Appraisals, I mean, you know, the ones that we were seeing back in June that we were still able to use at the 1 to 1.1 based on what we're doing. Obviously, everyone's going to be different. Appraisals are now coming back at 850 to 9 from, you know, and that's quite of a, you know, quite a bit of a drop because the appraisers aren't able to use those same comparables anymore because that, you know, comparable is only good for so long. But it is good that you're saying that there is some light at the end of the tunnel and people are starting to get back in as the rates are still high, you know, in anticipation of them dropping. You know, the inflation, I think numbers came in at 2.9 and they were projecting 3.3. That's a good sign. Yeah. What are you hearing, you know, from the banks on what they're thinking and when some of those rates might start dropping?
Well, I follow some prominent trade analysts, and obviously the bond yield is an leading indicator of what the market is expecting with respect to rate cuts. And with the recent news about inflation that come in better than expectation, that strengthens the expectation that a rate cut will happen. Initially, the expectation was around April, but the talk right now is June, July, around, you know, summertime. So that's now on the horizon, right? And there is confidence in that, unless something weird, really weird happens between now and then in terms of numbers. But if everything stays on track, we'd be in a good position to cut for the Bank of Canada to start cutting by then. On the fixed rate side of things, obviously that's dependent on the bond yield. And the bonds have ticked up a little bit recently, but overall, they're down from where they were back in October. So that impacts fixed rates, right? And what you see happen with the bond rate is not always reflective of whether or not the banks are going to offer discounts on the fixed rates. So temporarily, the fixed rates have not gone anywhere, but as the rate cuts become more prominent and the bond yield reflects that, we should see some discounts on the fixed rate front. But that's where we're sitting right now on these two.
I think we're all anticipating and hoping and praying for these rates to come back down. I think not so much for like, I mean, sure, for the rates themselves, but even just for the ability to get that lift on the properties and the refinance and also just qualifying, right? Are you seeing that people with, you know, maybe that they were qualifying for $500,000 or $600,000 back then, now with the rates are qualifying for, I don't know, maybe it's 300,000 and it's not enough to really get into the market. Like, what are you seeing in that standpoint with qualifications?
Well, qualification has definitely tightened. Every time the rate goes up, the bar goes up and it's been tighter and tighter. If we want to squeeze better qualifications right now with certain clients, we have to take a longer term fixed rate versus, let's say, a shorter term fixed or a 5 years variable. Why? Because the longer terms tend to be lower in terms of rate compared to the shorter terms because, you know, in the long run, the rates are coming down. So there are some times, like certain files right now, Sarah, that we have to qualify under a longer term to make them work. But overall, qualification's been tighter and we have been almost trying to find new ways to get the file through. Like, are there desks that we could clear? Is there something we can stretch amortization on? Can we consider rental income from additional units? Can we use higher rents through market rents if the client is not getting rents through the leases that they have? Like, where can we add income and where can we reduce debt to make the deals work and get the client the best mortgage qualification under the current, you know, guidelines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, are there lenders that have come to the table and made it easier to work with mortgage brokers like yourselves, right? Are there some banks or B lenders or credit unions that are trying to make it so that it's easier and attract more investor clients?
Yes, I'm actually very excited to share this news with you today. BMO, re-entered the mortgage broker channel. And that's very recent. And they're working with a select group of brokers to start. Streetwise is one of them. And they have three products that I'm excited about. And they are of high relevance to investors. So the first product is a product for new construction, pre-construction properties. You know, historically, if you bought a pre-construction at $500,000 and at the time of closing, it's worth $600,000, you go to a traditional lender, they lend you on the $500,000, the lower of the two numbers, right? And investors are almost saying, done. How can I build this equity at the day of closing? And the answer is, if you want a bank rate or a traditional lender, you couldn't in the past.
Interesting.
What BMO's doing is they're allowing you to borrow on the appraised value on the $600,000.
Wow, that's huge. So you could, if you bought low enough and it was long enough out there, you could actually probably get away with putting maybe very little down, if anything.
Exactly. So that translates into less down because now, you know, it's based on the value, not the purchase price. And you can actually walk away with cash at closing that goes towards your HST, if there is HST, or a cash back to take to your closing, like for our future investing or to cover some closing costs. So that's huge.
So do you know why they why would they do that? Is it because all of a sudden no one was buying pre-construction anymore? Because for me, it was never really my strategy. It's a little bit too controlled with the boards and the condos and that kind of stuff. It just hasn't been my thing. However, you know, this is quite interesting for somebody that, again, you can't rely on everything being going up all the time. And you don't know what kind of market you're going to be in. But I think do you think it's because they wanted to bring more investments in these pre-constructions because they were drying up? Like, what do you think the reason would be?
Actually, I don't know what the real rationale is, but my guess is if the value supports, if the value is completed by a third party appraiser and supportive of the, you know, the real value, why not lend them the value? I never understood why the banks were going with the lower of the two. I would understand if somebody purchased something a month ago and a month later they're looking to appraise it higher, I'd understand why a bank would say, no, that's too soon. But if someone has purchased it years ago or even a year ago and the value is coming in higher, you know, it made sense to me for them to go on the higher value, which is what BMO was doing.
So otherwise, if it wasn't for BMO, you'd have to close and then you'd have to essentially, I guess, close as a variable and then like find another mortgage or lender to move it to?
Two options. If you close private, you forget that value on closing up, but the cost is going to be a lot higher. But if you close with a bank, you would close with a variable rate. And then 6 months later, you can go and ask for an exception to reconsider the value as a refinance or switch lenders and go to another lender altogether. Okay. Right.
So worst case scenario, you pay fees for the private or you wait 6 months.
That's right.
But you would have still had to come up with a 20% down.
Yes. Yes. We still have to come up with a 20% down. This product, by the way, is available also on primary residences. It's not just.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's the first one. The second one is.
Sorry. One question before we move into the second one. This is Canada wide?
Right now, this is Ontario, not Canada wide.
Okay. Okay. So Ontario.
And the starting point.
Nice.
It's Ontario and Western Canada. And the second one, ready for this?
I'm actually excited. Is this going to be something good for investors?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good.
Allowing a bank product on Airbnbs and short-term rentals.
And now we're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors.
Hi, this is Dahlia, founder of Streetwise Mortgages and Streetwise Wealth. Should I wait for interest rates to drop before I get back into real estate investing? This has been one of the most frequently asked questions that I've been getting for the past month and a half. And I decided to put together this video to help answer this question for you, but to also provide you with very specific numbers for you to think about to come to your own conclusions. This video is being recorded on March the 1st of 2024. Firstly, let's start with an important question. And the question is, what is it that we know today that we are not sure about for the past year? Well, we know that inflation is finally under control here in Canada, and the last reading came in at 2.9, which is close to where the Bank of Canada wants to see it before considering rate cuts. They know that inflation is currently being pushed by shelter costs, including real estate, selling, rental prices, and mortgage costs. And this is actually very important. They have acknowledged that shelter costs are likely not to decrease because of the high demand for real estate. And they're actually ready to move on. Here's the exact quote by the Bank of Canada's governor saying, "We've got to look at the whole economy, not just housing. The Bank of Canada targets CPI inflation, and shelter is just one of eight components. Hence, if average core inflation dips well into the 2% range, rising shelter costs should not derail rate cuts." Guys, honestly, this is huge for all of us in the real estate industry. The last year, I know, a year and a half, actually, felt like we are walking around with a target on our backs, and that the Bank of Canada and the government organization are actively and deliberately trying to break the real estate industry. At least the Bank of Canada is now ready to move on, and they are giving up on waiting for a further cool down in the property values or rents. The cool down we've just gone through, in my view, was super artificial and is driven by high interest rates. Even though the underlying demand is high due to the population growth and the chronic undersupply that we all know about in the housing market. You know what? Even if we park this high demand and undersupply potential price explosion for a second, let's say it's all neutral, we still know that historically, anytime interest rates decrease, prices start to go up. It's just a fact. So now, whether interest rates cuts happen in April or June or later in the year, everyone is sure at this point that cuts will start this year. Now, let's look at some specific numbers on what that looks like. If you were to find a rental property today, let's say at $600,000 to buy, and you get an 80% mortgage at a 6.9 interest rate, variable rate, and it takes a full year for that interest rate to actually drop down by 1%, you would pay about $5,000 more in mortgage interest versus having waited for that 1% drop. However, while you're waiting, as soon as the first rate cut comes in, prices can easily rise by 5% during that first year. That is an extra, are you ready? $32,000 in price. So if you wait, you are risking paying an extra $32,000 in order to maybe save $5,000 in interest. And that interest, as a real estate investor, you get to write off anyway as an interest expense. I personally believe we may see a much bigger pop in values than the 5% given the pent-up demand that we've had for many years now. Listen, I'm not saying that every market is the same and every market is going to appreciate or all investments are cash flowing. I get it. Things have been tough. So getting into a property with a negative cash flow is not easy. But I'm honestly heartbroken as I'm seeing investors today passing on some amazing opportunities that are already cash flowing at higher interest rates because they want to wait for this rate drop. I am happy to show you guys some opportunities like rent-to-own opportunities that I'm seeing investors pass on that are generating $800 to $1,000 a month today. Imagine what that cash flow would look like once the rates start to drop. The takeaway. Taking advantage of short-term or adjustable rate mortgages can let you as a savvy investor lock into properties now before rents and home values move out of reach. When economic conditions improve, as an investor, you can then refinance at even better rates down the road and see your cash flow increase. Please, everyone, do yourself a favor. If you're coming across cash flowing opportunities today or even cash flow neutral opportunities today, jump. This is the time to jump. Rents are going to go up from here. Rates are going to go down from here. These opportunities will be cash flowing beautifully in a year or two. And you may not be able to find them or afford them in a year or two. This is the time to make a move. Shield yourself from the negative news and the media and look at the data and look at history. This is the time investors build wealth and build cash flow. It's when everyone is fearful. If you have questions, if you're looking for a second opinion, if you want to look at cash flowing opportunities, if you want to bounce ideas off us, reach out. info@streetwisemortgages.com.
And now back to the show.
Oh, I love this.
Yes. Okay. See, I knew it.
Yay, we're finally, you know, but it's interesting because now they're coming in at a time where there's all these short-term bylaws and the federal government is trying to change the definition of it to 90 days.
I know. This would have been much better.
Very good 5 years ago. I'm sure it's still very good. Let's hear it because I think this could be very interesting for the midterm market as well.
Yeah. So 75%, not 80%, 30-year amortization bank rate.
Okay.
You know, short-term, midterm rentals, no problem. In the past, it was a challenge. If the bank Googles a property and sees that it's rented nightly or under Airbnb, they wouldn't do the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if you're buying something that's, if you have something that you've been renting Airbnb, they would actually go and utilize the income you've been reporting on the tax returns, which could be huge in terms of quality,
yeah.
Right? And if you're buying something to rent, Airbnb is not a problem.
Oh, wow. Okay. So let's just say my midterm duplex in Burlington, if I'm making $7,000 a month on that one, as an example, instead of four or 3,500, whatever it is, let's just say four, they will take that 7,500 bucks and then look at like what, 50%, 75% of that?
You've been reporting it on the tax return, right?
Yeah.
They're actually using a high rental offset. They're using 80%.
Wow. Okay. That's actually really good because now it opens the door for a lot of opportunities. I'm excited about this one. So yeah. Short term, I guess if you've got the licensing and you're not in a place where you can't do it, or do they even look at that? I mean, you still want to do everything by the books, but do they factor that in? Like do they ask for the license or we don't know yet? It's still too new.
I haven't seen them ask for the license.
Okay. Well, if you're midterm and you're doing 30 plus days, most municipalities aren't going to necessarily ask. I know Vancouver strictly is 90 days now, but it's going to be interesting. I like this one. And then if you're making $50,000 on your cottage, then they aren't going to just take a very small rental amount, market rent anymore. They're actually going to take the income.
Yeah. If you've been reporting it on your tax returns, they will use a big chunk of it. If you're buying something new, they will obviously use market rents because there is no history on what it's been renting for. But knowing that's Airbnb is not a problem. The banks in the past would have been buying these deals.
Do you know, I like this. Do you know if you're buying from somebody that's previously run it as a business, if they would look at their prior year, if you had that data?
See, this is a very new product on the street and I will definitely see if that's a possibility. And then I'll have an answer for you at that point. I don't have that answer yet. It's a new product.
No, this is good. So what about, okay, so now I know it's a new product. And if you're like, hey, I have to get back to you, that's totally cool. But I'm just going to give you another scenario. So I think midterm is going to be easier. Short term, you'll have to, I think, just, you know, make sure that you're doing it by the books with the municipality. But what if it's a three-season cottage?
Yeah. And?
Are they going to still qualify with a similar?
Oh, three-season cottage. So it's, you don't have road access?
No, it just usually means that it's like, you don't have like a permanent heat source, or it might need like insulation in order to like make it a four season, or for whatever reason, like usually it's insulation or a heat source is not like a permanent heat source.
I don't think three season cottages would apply to this product because three season cottages as a property type typically are treated very differently with every bank compared to a four season. So I doubt this would apply to the three seasons, but again, it's something that I'd have to double check for you.
Okay, cool. But if you guys are at home listening to this and you have an Airbnb or a midterm property, now you don't have to hide it anymore. We could go through the BMO, and it actually might make more sense to not hide it if your property actually has been doing really well, right? And you've, like, I guess, so what do they look for? Just the tax returns?
The tax returns, yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Just the tax returns, or are they going to ask for like the Airbnb data or like the midterm data?
I'm looking at the guidelines right now and it's just the tax returns.
Okay.
But
You can do your tax return, guys, talk to your mortgage broker.
Yeah. Always talk to your mortgage broker before you do your tax returns. because you can then plan based on what you want to do for the year versus do the reverse and come back with the tax returns and then learn later that it didn't work.
Right? Yes. Absolutely. Right. As I'm thinking this, I literally just had a conversation with Andrew, my accountant. And so I'll just run a couple of things by you
as well,
because that next year might be a, you know, interesting refinance year as things come back up.
Yeah. There is one more.
Yes. What is the last one? Is it as exciting as the midterm, short-term stuff?
It's a good one, but the one I just shared is the first two that I shared are the biggest ones. This one is still good. It's allowing gifted down payment on rental properties.
This is good too, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, in the past, a lot of lenders, especially the ones offering good rates, wanted to see that investors have skin in the game. They wanted the investor to put their 20% down from quote unquote their own money. So that's a secured line of credit, savings, their own assets. But now they're okay, BMO's okay with a gifted down payment. That could be, you know, brother, sister, daughter, son, close relative, parents who are willing to write a letter to say, I am gifting this down payment to Sarah, and, you know, they'll work with it. And that's typically applicable in a primary residence situation, but they're allowing it on a rent.
Nice. So now it doesn't need to be, it doesn't need to vest in your account for 90 days or 120 days anymore.
No, the gift letter showing that the donor completed their gift letter, the money is in your account. But if the amount is larger than, I think, 50,000, I have to double check the number, they may want to go back to the donor's account and just make sure that money did not come from the mattress.
So why is BMO being so generous with us now? Like, what changed? Did they realize they were losing market share?
Well, BMO's coming back to the channel wanting to win market share. And so they identified opportunities that made sense for them that are underserved by other lenders, which is smart.
Yeah, I like it. So BMO is up at, you know, is definitely up there. Are there other changes with any other lenders that are exciting that for us investors?
That's the major one with the limited edition. Everybody else is, I would say, stand still right now. I haven't seen anything major that's changed.
I think Scotia changed their STEP program, not for the better, recently, right? Do you know anything?
That's changed by the regulators across all the banks.
Okay.
The regulators, that was what, a year ago almost now, they've lowered how much you can advance on the line. So originally, you would get a mortgage and you would get a line of credit. And as you pay down the mortgage, the limit on the line of credit would increase and the entire thing can be at 80% of the value. Now they're saying, yeah, you can pay down the mortgage and the line of credit would increase. However, the entire thing cannot exceed 65%.
I think that was in November that they made the change.
The amount that can be advanced over to the line.
Yeah,
it's a collaborative change across the banks, not just school shipping.
Got it. Okay. All right. No, that's good. What about like B lenders, credit unions? Are you seeing any changes on their end?
No, I haven't seen anything.
I think there's a couple though that do 35-year amortizations, right? Is that still a thing?
That's always been there. The 35-year amortization.
Yeah.
The B lenders, yeah, 35, 40 years. That's still there.
And now we're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors.
This week's podcast is brought to you by usproperties.ca. Are you looking to invest in turnkey US real estate that provides exceptional cash flow and appreciation? If so, reach out to James at james@usproperties.ca or visit the company website, usproperties.ca, for more information.
And now back to the show.
Okay. All right. Good. So the big one is BMO then.
Yes. Yes. That's the most recent and most exciting in my view.
Awesome. Speaking of exciting and most recent, from, you know, you obviously, you know, seeing lots of different opportunities and deals come through your desk and, you know, pretty much coast to coast, Canada wide strategy, you know, various strategies. What are like some of the top things that you're like, check out this market or this type of strategy is interesting? Like, are you looking and seeing changes, shifts, thoughts on that?
I'm seeing a lot of talk and some implementation, obviously, with properties where you can add units under commercial financing or build units under commercial financing, obviously, because of the CMHC preference for adding units and then giving better and faster approvals for anybody that is contributing to housing right now. So I'm seeing more investors engage in these types of, I'm also seeing investors buy 5 flexes or above from developers. So somebody would build, let's say, a duplex on a lot, and they would build 3 of them. So you've got 6 units, right? That's a developer. I'm seeing investors buy those newly built units straight from that developer and finance them under the CMHC MLI. Or, you know, give that developer deposits over time while that developer builds these units with the idea of closing with CMHC when the project is complete. I'm seeing more and more of these deals.
That is interesting. Are you seeing that in Ontario mostly?
No, I'm not seeing those in Ontario. I'm seeing those in Calgary, in other provinces. Not in Ontario. What I'm seeing in Ontario are residential to commercial conversion. So someone buys either an empty space and slices it up into units, or they're buying a house, demolish the house, the lot is big enough to work with Bill 23, and now they're going to, you know, create 5 or more units. That's in the Toronto neighborhoods. I'm seeing more of that. But that one where you're buying from a developer or out of province.
Okay, that is interesting. Now, are you seeing more success with like commercial multifamily, like 5 or more units these days with the, you know, appraisals, or are you still seeing some things happen with the 1 to 4 units that makes sense? Like if you had to pick, I know like, you know, there's an opportunity, you know, there's lots of variables, but in general, are you seeing the multifamily do better, like the larger stuff that are CMHC options, or is it still everything?
If the investor knows what they're doing and they know what they're doing and they're managing the project well, these are more complicated products. I mean, it sounds on paper, you've got CMHC and a higher loan to value with long amortizations and better rates, but these are more complex projects. I know once you've got these things stabilized, you've got more units under one roof and you can have a property manager, but to get to that point is an undertaking. And so I've seen investors struggle to execute on these ideas. Give you an example, like I've seen investors get stuck with private money again. So they took private money to build up something with the idea of exiting with CMHC, and then CMHC changed the rules. No, you know, no warnings, changed the rules. They said, you know what? We don't like this whole thing about you kicking tenants out and doing rent evictions. And we want to make sure that you've actually contributed to housing. And therefore, we're only going to pay lenders that are on our list. We're only going to pay lenders that you've been with for 2 years. They made it difficult to exit these types of. So I've seen some complications on the multifamily side as a result. So this is a long answer to your question. Am I seeing better performance here compared to there? No, not necessarily. It's all dependent on the execution of the investor. It's not based on the asset class. I'm still seeing investors make money in residential. I mean, there are investors who are still cashing away using a rent-to-own model, for example, right now. There are investors who are buying. They are not planning on renovating and flipping or renovating and burying yet, but they've locked in properties that they know has the potential, and they will tackle such projects when the time is right. So they're securing assets in these markets at better prices, and they will materialize in terms of fruits at a different time, although we may not be seeing it at this point in time. You see what, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there are opportunities on both sides, and it all depends on the execution, and you know, it's also about managing the risk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know we talk a lot about you as a mortgage broker, and but you're also an investor, and you're a successful investor. Can you give us just a little bit of information, like how long you've been investing for and what some of your favorite strategies are for yourself?
I started investing in 2007, and I am primarily invested in Barrie and Peterborough. My portfolio is made up all of residential properties, not commercial, multi-units, small multi-units, really. I've done garden suites, I've done turnkey, I've done BRRRRs, I've done renovations and legalization of units. So that's my residential portfolio. And then I supplement with private money because I like private lending. I utilized it when I left the banks to generate cash flow, and I utilize it to create some income during down times or to work up the capital temporarily until I find a deal. So that's how my portfolio is structured. Recently, I started looking at commercial money in downtown Toronto, where I would take a unit and turn it into a 5 or a 6. So that is something that I am going to move forward with. That would be the next type of, you know, asset addition to the portfolio.
All right. Very cool. And this is, you know, I say this a lot too, is your team ideally is also real estate investors, and you're a perfect example of that. You know, you're actively doing it yourself. You're still continuing to do it yourself, and you're able to scale. And so you're also able to share your insights as well with people looking for similar scalability and experiences, you know, because before I met you, you know, I was working, well, it was directly with a big bank, and they were asking me how to invest in real estate. That lady, super nice lady. But unfortunately, if you're asking me how to do it and I was still getting started, it didn't make a ton of sense. But I think it's important to work, you know, with your team that also has experience doing it themselves so that they can guide you accordingly. What is next for you? Like, are you looking to expand your business? Are you looking to get into new markets? Like, what are some of your goals, whether it's personal with your investments or, you know, with a mortgage broker business?
I'm definitely looking to expand the brokerage and increase our reach significantly in Ontario and across Canada. So I am working on some exciting things that we will be announcing, I would say, in the next few months. On the investment side, I am right now, I'll tell you what I'm doing. Aside from this Toronto opportunity that I shared with you, I love data, and I'm always looking at data. You could see in some markets that properties, obviously, this is not news. I mean, even without the data, it's now intuitive. It's observable. You drive around and you see properties sitting on the market for longer. Neighborhoods that used to, you put the sale sign and it disappears the next day is no longer happening, right? So you have properties sitting on the market for 90 days. I have investors who, you know, listed and pulled their deals because they didn't get a buyer or didn't get the price. So in markets like this, I feel there is an opportunity for us investors to negotiate, you know, better take backs, to negotiate better deals. So I'm looking for opportunities in strong markets that I know once the markets turn and they have a very tight demand and supply, like Toronto. If I pick up assets in Toronto right now with quote unquote creative financing, okay, vendor take backs involved, and I'm carrying the asset, once the market's correct, that property is going to pick up value very quickly. So that's something I'm looking at right now. Where are the opportunities to pick up properties with creative money? Of course, I got to make sure I'm able to carry them. The numbers make sense. But I know that it's a temporary dip in value and demand and supply is so tight that once the rates start to improve, the demand is going to come back and the value is going to accelerate. So that's something I'm actively working on right
now. All right. That's very exciting. Dahlia, thank you so much. I'm excited about the BMO opportunities, especially with the midterm rental stuff, because that is directly applicable or my cottages. But thanks for sharing your insights and being so, you know, willing to help my listeners as well. And if you guys are listening to this and you haven't reached out to Streetwise Mortgages, I mean, you should have if you've been listening to by now, at least to have a conversation and get some questions answered. But what is your best, you know, way to reach you and your team, Dahlia?
info@streetwisemortgages.com. And Sarah, what I want to leave everyone with is the fact we want to help as many as possible. I know there's a lot of pressure out there. So whether you need a second opinion or whether you have a renewal coming up or whether you have a cash crunch and you want to explore options or whether you have a private that is really like putting pressure on you, whatever the issue, if it's mortgage related, guys, or you want to expand, reach out to myself and my team, and we are here to support you and help you. And we are at the end of that runway. So we just got to, you know, get to that point.
You got to survive maybe another, 4 or 5 months, and then it'll get easier. If you guys are struggling out there, there is ups and there's downs, and hopefully we're almost at the end of it.
Yeah, I would say 6 more months.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dahlia, for being on the show. And listeners at home, reach out to Dahlia and her team. They have been instrumental in my growth and my scaling throughout. I want to say, what was it, 2017, 2016 that we started working together? I mean, it's been a while.
I lost track. I thought it was 2013, but I lost track.
2013 is when I started, but then I started and I got my first three with a big bank. And then actually my first two with a big bank. So it might've been, you know what, maybe it was 2015. Anyways, it's been a really long time, but guys, get some good people on your team. And Dahlia has been instrumental in helping me. So thank you so much, Dahlia, for everything you've been doing. And thanks for being on the show again.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larvey. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?